Hello. We are back. I don't know if we're going to do lots of episodes all together. I've got a couple of ideas, so maybe we're back for season 11. And we're just talking about the Oscars. I think they're coming up in a few days. So if you're listening after a few days, then, you know, it's not much point, really. That's not selling it very well. It's not actually about who's going to win the Oscars. It's just about the fact that, for once, like the 10 movies that got nominated for the Oscars, I liked all of them. And in fact, I loved most of them. So I thought I would have a chat to my wife. It was originally going to be 20 minutes long, but it goes for over an hour. No apologies for that. Anyway, welcome back. Cue the thing. All right, my lovely wife Justine's here. Hi, Justine.
Hi.
We are back to just have a quick chat about some movies before the Oscars.
Yes. Love the Oscars.
You love the Oscars. We always get horribly invested for no reason. And then
we get all dressed up in our finery for the
we do, yes.
event.
Well, it's a public holiday in Canberra when the Oscars are on. We could easily get all dressed up
Monday?
And watch it. Yeah.
Oh.
And watch it live. I don't know when it's on or where you would even find it, but... No, we often go, oh, so-and-so won the thing. Oh,
it's
yeah.
often, it's playing in the day normally.
Yeah, they play it in the day and then they play it again at night.
Yeah.
But is it, can you, did you grow up watching the Oscars? We might have had this conversation last year. I don't think we did.
I don't think so. But I think it was because of the time, like, yeah, I don't think. It was probably on quite late if
yeah.
it was shown.
Were you like mindful? Can you remember being mindful of which movies won Oscars and here and there? Or was it only when you got a bit older? Or?
Probably older. I remember my dad keeping an eye on it. He's a big movie, a movie buff. Like, I remember him talking about movies and who won. And like, probably I remember him talking about them around the time of Pulp Fiction.
That's, right.
When he started talking about films and, you know, what was out at the moment and take me along to the movies and stuff like that.
He didn't take you to see Pulp Fiction, did he?
I don't think he took me to see Pulp Fiction, but he went a couple of times and
oh, really?
Told me about it. Mm, he probably cool. could have.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. R-rated movies, can you take your kids? I don't think you can take your kids
not.
To it.
Yeah.
You would have been 14, that would have been pretty fun.
Yeah.
Sneak in. That could have managed. Anyway, we're talking about movies for... I just wanted to go over like best picture stuff, but we wanted to talk about a movie that we both saw that didn't get nominated for. I don't know if it got nominated for any awards. Maybe it did.
What movie?
All of Us Strangers.
Oh right, yeah. I don't know if it has been nominated.
So, did you enjoy All of Us Strangers?
I did. I loved it.
So, what is? We don't want to spoil it. We like people to watch it. It's a beautiful movie.
Mm, yeah, it's a small cast.
Yeah, it's literally four people for most of the time.
Four people.
Yeah.
A love
few, like,
story.
Crowd scenes here.
And very much about family, I think, and grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And horribly sad.
It's very sad, yes. But as I was going in, the person who I was buying my peanut M&Ms from at the counter, the salesperson, movie guy, made a comment about something that happened in the movie or was going to happen, and made me the whole way through like thinking, wondering when this was going to happen. And just please don't say that to people.
Yeah, don't say really. So someone there was like, oh, this bit will happen, and what?
Yes, like totally spoiled. Well, didn't say exactly what happened, but just like said something that indicated something.
God, that's nuts.
And then I was like, so the whole way through, I was kind of like waiting for
something to
happen. And it totally
spoiled. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It was when we went to see the Boy and the Heron, the Miyazaki movie we went and watched with the girls. I, again, in line, the people behind me just said, oh, did you watch The Boy and the Heron last night. Yeah, I did come to the movies. Did you like it? I did. What I liked most, and they literally had this conversation, and I had to sort of focus my attention
away from them and
not block out. But I was, I guess I'm of age where I could have said, excuse me. Like, I really should have.
Mm.
What are you doing? Don't talk. You're in line at the movies. Don't talk about.
Thanks for spoiling it. Yep.
Don't talk about
movies. Yeah, I couldn't
believe
this guy said that to me when I was buying my food about to go in.
Is it as good as your dad spoiling Don't Worry, Darling?
And nothing beats that.
So if you haven't seen Don't Worry, Darling, now. And you want to watch it, just come back in about 45 seconds. So your dad said should watch Don't Worry, Darling. You and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really good. People say it's not good. It is good. You've just got to realize, before you go in, you've got to realize this. It's all a simulation.
So why?
If you know that, you'll enjoy it. Like, thanks, Dad.
Had he watched it twice? Like, that's the only thing I can think of is that he watched it twice. And when he watched it the second time, he was like, oh, this makes more sense now.
I don't know. But why would you spoil that for someone else?
I don't, because
he
your
enjoyed
dad
it so much more the second time. I don't think so. I think the whole point is to be surprised and try and figure it out.
I don't know. I mean, that maybe I'm giving him too much credit of just like...
You're giving him far too much credit.
Yeah, to be like, oh, I watched it once. I didn't quite get it. I watched it the second time. And knowing that really helped.
No. He was just like, oh, people are saying something. But you just got to realize it's all a simulation.
Oh, he actually said, it's not a spoiler, but it's all a simulation.
Yeah, I think he said that. No, that is a spoiler, Dad.
That is
total
so,
spoiler.
So weird.
Oh, it's so funny.
Anyway, so the person says that to you about All of Us Strangers.
Yes.
And then you're going and waiting for it. But it's,
it was the most ridiculous thing to say going in, yeah.
That is just so weird. I'm just looking up if it did get nominated for any awards.
Yeah, so just for... Four people, four in the cast, and they were all amazing.
Yeah, beautiful. I don't think it got nominated for any awards, which is strange, because like Andrew Scott and, what's his face? The other man. He's in After Sun.
Paul Mescal.
Just
Mescal.
Beautiful. Mescal. Lovely.
Both of them. Paul Mescal is just...
He is just something about him, right? He can just be like, oh, that person's got a deep well of sadness in them just by...
I think After Sun, was that the first movie I'd seen with him?
With him in, I think so, yeah.
I'd heard of him, but...
We both loved After Sun.
We loved it, and he'll forever be that character to me.
Yeah, maybe that's it, maybe.
He was just so perfect in that movie that I just love everything he does. Yeah. And he's... So good in this too.
And if you liked After Sun, which is a story of a man who goes on holidays with his like 12-year-old daughter, like, you know, preteen daughter.
And he's really trying to hold it together.
He's trying to hold it together.
He's having a hard time.
Yeah. He's newly divorced and he's with his daughter and they go on holidays. And it's just, again, like a movie where it's not really telling you this is where this guy's coming from, but you're just like, oh, he's doing his best.
You feel the struggle.
Yeah.
The sadness. And it's from the perspective of the little girl grown up thinking about this summer.
Yeah.
With an adult perspective, this, you know, reminiscing as an adult back on, and I guess realizing, looking at her dad as an adult thinking what he was going through and having a different sort of feeling about it too.
It's quite similar to All of Us Strangers too, isn't
it?
It's like looking back.
Families, memories.
Yeah, and regrets and things like that. And it's a very strange movie. When you finish watching it and then you think back of like, if you were to tell someone or ask someone like, what is actually happening in this movie? I don't think it's important. Does that make sense? I know that is very obtuse for anyone who hasn't seen the movie.
I wasn't surprised to learn that it was a Japanese...
Right.
It was based on a book by a Japanese author.
Yeah.
It's very gentle.
Yeah.
But...
It doesn't explain.
No.
And there's a lot of... I've been reading quite a lot of Japanese authors where there's a lot of that where they're like, this thing is happening.
Yeah.
We're not going to explain it.
And a little bit of mystery, a bit of...
Magic realism.
Magic realism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember very not so far into the movie thinking that of like, all right, I'm going to turn off my brain that's going to keep trying to work out. So yeah. What exactly?
You've just got to enjoy the feeling of it and the emotions. And I think it's, the exploration of memory and those little moments that you have with people that may not mean much at the time, but what you reflect on.
Yeah. And also the idea of, you know, doing the podcast sometimes with my brothers, you get this where you discuss a memory or an event and they've got a completely different tone of memory.
Yeah.
And this kind of is trying to resolve some of that, I guess.
Yeah.
How do you like look back on things and then if someone says, no, it wasn't exactly, you're memorizing the, or you're remembering the tone wrong. Mm. It was meant in this way. I said this, but it was meant in this way.
Mm.
Well, how do you reconfigure that? If you are your memories and then someone's like, no, that memory's wrong. Then well, how does that change for you?
But not one for people who want just a realist movie.
No.
You've got to suspend belief and
and
go along for a bit of a ride and be open to it. Be open to the experience.
Oh, that's very deep, very nice way to put it.
But it's lovely. It's beautiful, gentle story and really, really moving and beautiful acting.
Yeah, it's one I mean I'd like to sit down with our daughters at some point and watch both after. I don't know if they enjoy, both of those After Sun and All of Us Strangers.
But yeah, just... and After Sun, it also explores that. We're just going back to After Sun, the father and daughter on their little summer holiday.
Yeah.
That the girl is around 12, on the cusp of sort of teenager and little girl.
Yeah.
Prepubescent, sort of on the cusp. Sort of exploring that time as well of you're not a kid, you're not an adult, you're in between.
Yeah.
And I love the way it kind of explored that stage and age as well.
Yeah.
It's an interesting kind of dynamic. And then being away with her dad as well. So
she's having a bit of freedom.
It's coming of age. Yeah. It's a bit of a coming of age movie.
And she's got a bit of freedom.
Yeah.
And there's other kids that are just like, hey, come and hang with us. And she's like, okay.
Yeah, exploring and, you know, getting that bit of freedom. But she's also a kid.
Yeah, she's staying up late and her dad's like, well, we're having fun here. Just come back to the hotel or the room, like, when you're done. And you're like, oh, okay, when they're that age, all right, let's give you a bit of, see and hope she can find her way back and it's a bit both of those movies are just
both of them too, it's like looking back on childhood memories as an adult, exploring those experiences that you had as a kid but with an adult lens. Both of them sort of do that and
they're both hard to shake,
those movies. They stick with you.
That would be hard to imagine that as a double feature. Watching those two would be. I mean, you'd love it. Yeah. this is my wife we're talking to. Oh yeah,
that'd be great.
That'd be a great double
Paul
feature.
Paul Mescal double feature.
Yeah, happy times. All right, so these are the 10 best picture nominees. I know you haven't seen them all, so let me just go through: American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Zone of Interest.
Okay, well, let's go one through one by one, and you say if you've seen it, and I'll say if I've seen it.
Well, American Fiction I've seen, but you haven't. Anatomy of a Fall.
I don't have really any interest to see American Fiction.
Yeah, well, again, another movie where I was like, I watched American Fiction. I really liked it. What's it about? And then when I told her, you should have seen her eyes glaze over, and you realize this is a boring movie.
It sounds boring.
It sounds boring.
It doesn't grab me, to be honest.
No, it's pretty funny. It's
It sounds very American, though, as well. I mean, they are...
It is very American. It's also a movie that's like, hey, like, this is the... I want to just show you what's up with race and writing. So it's a bit like, oh, we're going to be a bit clever with, you know, how we show the writing industry. But also all the white people in the movie are like, oh, you are black. That is interesting to us. We can sell it. So it's got this satire element where you're like, okay, I got it. Really hits you on the head with the satire. It's not subtle, but it's also trying to show you, like, come on, there are different stories out there that need to be told.
Yeah.
But then it's got this guy who has to come home and look after his mother, who's got Alzheimer's, who occasionally wanders off into the night. I should say this is all going to... There might be spoilers here and there, so apologies. But there's a scene where she has a moment of clarity and explains some key moment of this man's life with, you know, such depth and a move. And I was like, I've seen... You're talking about how we need different stories and you're just showing me the same thing.
It reminds me of that movie. That scene in Parenthood where the lady with the grandma with Alzheimer's, I went on the ride. It went up and down. Yeah. Like, your mum's very clever.
Steve Martin losing. But that's what it's like. It's like, oh, we're showing you, like, the point is that there are different stories out there, and why do we just focus, especially on African-American stories that are set in poverty and about the dignity of poverty and all this stuff. And then it hits you in the head with the satire of that. And then also what's happening with his family is...
Mm.
What we've seen before. The thing that makes it good is the performances, and some of the moments really made me laugh.
Mm.
Some of them even despite myself, but some of them are like very real. It's
okay. Well, I should give it a watch.
It's not going to win Best Picture,
yeah,
because it's not a Best Picture, but it was trying different stuff. But it was one of those ones where it was like, oh, this is a cutting satire, and you're like, I got it in the first 5 minutes. And even him as a character is like, I can't believe this is happening, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't have the main character being like, this is ridiculous. I don't know. It's, anyway, but I did enjoy it. All right. And then the next is Anatomy of a Fall.
Loved it.
Now, if you haven't seen Anatomy of a Fall, if I explain this plot of that movie, you would go, how long does this movie go for? 2.5 hours? It's French, and it's in English, and it's in French. And a man... Oh, we're interrupted by a cat. Just his paw.
I think it's mostly in English. That's why, why they say it's had so much success in American and English-speaking world, because most of it is in English. That's very accessible.
Yes.
Because the main character is German, and she's married to...
Sandra Hüller,
yeah, who is married to a Frenchman, and they decided that they should speak English as their shared language.
Mm-hmm.
So, they don't have to...
Yeah.
Neither of them have to... speak the other person's mother tongue. They've got a neutral language between them, so they mostly in English.
Yeah. And so,
but it does start with, when it starts,
it's a weird start, isn't it?
The start is really unsettling. Sandra Hüller is the wife. She's being interviewed. She's a famous author. And they're speaking English, but I kept saying to Matt, what's going on?
The sound design is wrong.
It was dubbed. Like, you know when you're watching a language is dubbed in English and the timing's just a bit odd, the cadence isn't right.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, there's something wrong with the sound. Is it dubbed? Is it like, no, they are speaking, but it was unsettling and I kept stopping it thinking there was some problem with it. Yeah. And then in the end I said, oh, must be because English is not their first language. It just sounded odd. And then there's a very distinctive and quite infamous part of the movie at the beginning where music is played, a particular song.
Yeah. It's a
Rastafarian.
It's a steel drum version of a hip hop sample.
Yeah.
And it's just played over and over at an incredible volume. Drum,
so loud, and you're just like, turn it off.
So you can't quite hear them talking. That seems out of...
And it was purposely loud.
Yeah.
So the husband played it on purpose. They've got some issues, this couple. And he, you know, obviously didn't want the interview happening. He was in a mood and played this music really loud. But so loud that it's like, as a viewer, it's very uncomfortable. And you're like, please. And it goes on for a really long time.
Yeah.
So it's set up from the start to make you feel very on edge and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that song has just become stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it starts like that. It's very unusual.
Very unusual.
You sort of feel uncomfortable. You don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
You don't quite know the characters all that well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a movie where the center of the movie is a mystery, but it's not about the mystery.
No.
It's about the characters.
Yeah.
And trying to work out, I guess, what it really... it's like it challenges the viewer, right?
To
be like, what do you think about...
Mm. Just from first glance and from first impressions of this couple and this woman who is not a typical woman. I think that was part of it as well. Her reactions, her attitude and the way she presents herself isn't what we would assume to be the victim or the, you know, the usual kind of feminine type reaction. So it challenges you to be like, well, yeah, I don't know what to make of her.
Yeah.
Do I believe her? Because there is a murder.
It's a fall.
Oh, sorry, not a murder. There's a death.
Justine's calling it a murder.
there's a death, which doesn't quite make sense. No. And they never answer fully.
And you realize about halfway through, you're like, oh, they're not. This isn't going to be like. And we've found the clue, which shows us, and then we're going to watch the scene where it all unfolds. You just very clearly are like, oh, this movie's about like, well, what would I believe? And like, even when you're saying like she's not the usual respondent, we've seen this in real life, right? With like Lindy Chamberlain, what's her name, that I want to say Peter Falconio, in the outback of Australia.
Yeah, there's something suspicious.
There's something, because she's not crying.
She came out wearing a was it a Playboy bunny Cheeky Monkey? A Cheeky Monkey
she's
shirt.
She's wearing the wrong shirt, so we don't trust
she's
her.
She's not crying enough. No, she's not saying the right things.
Yeah. What we expect of a victim and how they act, and if a woman especially is acting differently. And the whole point of the movie is that, is like, what happens when a woman isn't acting how we think, and then it's the layers of it are what makes it interesting, because she's in France, but she's not speaking French, and she's refusing or saying, I cannot express myself the way I want. I can do that in English. I'd rather do it in German, but like, no, you have to do it in English.
Yeah, so she's speaking a language that isn't her first language. She's...
And you're in court for maybe murder, and you have to... Precision is so important.
Yeah, exactly. And she can't express herself properly.
No.
And you're slowly revealed information about their relationship. Not much.
Yeah.
Not much. But there's one key scene because they had playing recordings to the courtroom.
That's right, yeah.
And they'd found a laptop and he'd recorded one of their fights. Now, it's a fight, couples fight, and they say horrible things to each other. But if you take that in isolation, I'm thinking if any fights we've had, if someone had recorded, not that we're fighting and yelling all the time, but with couples fight.
Yeah.
If someone recorded it and played it in a courtroom, like, that's not really a reflection you're normally
even
like.
Even if you played it in a fight and then played it back the next day. I mean, a classic example of this is when we've recorded our children having tantrums when they were younger, and then you watch them later once the emotion's gone, and you're like, oh, well, this looks completely different, and that's just a child having a meltdown.
Yeah.
But when we've shown it to them, they're like, we don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like
that's
it.
That's not me.
Yeah, and
they
it's
don't,
not me.
They don't, yeah, that's right. They don't identify with that person.
No,
there.
That's right.
So they play this, and that's really all we get of their relationship, is this crazy fight where they're obviously, you know, they're both writers. There's, you know, she has gotten a lot of success. He hasn't. He accuses her of stealing his ideas.
Yeah, that's an interesting
things bubble
scene,
over, which really made you think, geez, two creatives.
Yeah.
What is
resentment? And again, like resentment. In a fight, these resentments come up and you think, oh, this person's been carrying that for so long. But it might not be. It's just like, they're in a fight. Coming to my head. I haven't thought about it for...
There's also stuff about her sexuality. Insinuated. Well, I think it's stated that she's bisexual.
And she's had an affair.
She's had an affair in the past. So they kind of... But the only interaction that you see of them together is this fight, which they reenact like
Yeah, they show you.
They show you.
In the movie, yeah.
Yeah.
We're spending way too long on Anatomy of a Fall. We really liked it.
Yeah, obviously. So that's all we see. And then even at the end, a verdict is made in the court, but there's still elements of doubt. There's nothing conclusive.
No.
It still leaves it open-ended as to...
Yeah, because you go, oh, it's not. This is not the point of the... You think, oh, this is the point of the movie, and then you're like, oh, it's not the
point. And I'm still left with doubts. Like, yeah. I there was... But it's I don't kind know
of
for what, sure
why I'm, you know, kind of a little surprised that it's been so successful, because a lot of times we want, like, a solution in these kinds of movies.
Yeah.
You usually would see, and some part of me thinks there's probably a scene of, like, they probably may have filmed a couple of versions of the scene
and before it would work they better to
when
be.
They were editing it, like, oh, we don't
and apparently
need to see
Sandra Hüller was told by the director, well, sorry, wasn't told whether her character did actually kill her husband or not.
Yeah.
And said, just play it as if you think you're innocent.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what she said. Oh, I played her as if she was innocent. But you're like, did you? Okay. That's some interesting choices. And some of it's improvised. And I mean, not improvised, kind of like that Mike Lee way of they improvise off
but
camera,
the acting
and
that scene, that hectic scene where they fight, which is the only time you see them together, really, is so incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I see this. I don't know how you do that. That's like,
how do you act?
She just is so good in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And how can you get yourself so whipped up in this?
No,
like,
how long
felt and looked so real. And you get this sense of their history and their relationship and their dynamic all from this one short scene.
I think, I mean, I don't think it's going to win Best Movie, but I have a feeling like it's got a real chance to win Original Screenplay.
Mm.
I really think it has a good chance to win Best Original Screenplay just because the writing is so, like... Like you said, you're just watching, like, oh, this just seems like real people with a real couple. And again, look at the acting. A lot of time I look at writing and go, how do you write something that's real? Because it's so easy just to write something and you go, oh, no, that's made up. That's not real. No one would actually say that. They just, everything just seems like it's being said by real people. Mm. Well, let's move on to something that's not about real people, and that's Barbie.
Oh, is that nominated?
Yeah, got nominated, yeah, for Best Picture.
I thought there was all this furor that it wasn't nominated. Or is that because...
No, Best Director.
Oh, it was an actress.
Yeah, no Best Actress, no. No Best... Best Director.
Huh.
Just Best Picture.
Well, I can't complain about that.
Well, they certainly can and will.
They have an
People
Oscar
certainly
nomination.
Certainly can and they certainly will. Yeah, but Greta Gerwig, like, why not get a Best Director... I don't know, like, who were our best directors? Like, if I go through the list of best director, if I can find it, we have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. We've got Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, and The Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer. Now...
I don't think Barbie's in that same category.
No.
I enjoyed Barbie. I had a great time. I thought it was fun, funny, clever. Yeah. Acting was great. It was so enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it got everyone psyched
to
wear pink and go to the movies.
Great time. I went twice.
Such fun.
Yeah.
It's not in the same category as these other movies.
No, I think it's right. It should be in Best Picture.
Yeah.
Best Director.
For what it achieved. But
sure.
I don't think she's quite in that same category
yet
as the others. Well, at least for this.
Yeah. I saw it twice. I saw it with you. And then I took both our girls. Noelle had already seen it and Violet hadn't.
Mm.
And watching it the second time was like, just listening to my children laugh and laugh and laugh at all the... hilarious bits and also the bits I didn't know that they'd find funny or understand, and they all got them. But watching the second time, what really surprised me is the scene at the end with Rhea Perlman shouldn't be good.
Mm.
It's really, I don't know, saccharine or cliched, and this is what it means to be a human. But Margot Robbie is so good in that scene.
I cried in that scene.
I know, but it shouldn't be good. Watching it the second time, I was like,
I know.
Oh, this, like, the writing's not good in that scene.
Yeah.
But she makes it, she makes it, she her makes reaction. It genuine. Yeah, she makes it genuine. And that, I think. Yeah,
she carried that.
I think maybe she should have got nominated because that's.
Well, she's brilliant in everything. I love Margot Robbie. It's not an easy role to play. Yeah, agreed. I think she could, I wouldn't be upset with her being nominated for that.
No. No.
But I don't think for director, it.
No,
I'm not that sad. Like, I think that they.
She didn't get nominated for Best Actress, which is because.
Well, who's in the categories?
I think Annette Bening for Naiad, which I've seen, and I would debate whether.
Yeah, I didn't even make it through the end of that.
No,
movie.
You didn't, did you? You never. No. You didn't get through the.
Swimming and swimming and swimming.
Lots of swimming and shouting and being cranky. But yes, I would agree.
I love seeing her and Jodie Foster as a cute couple. So, well, they weren't a couple, though, were they? They were friends.
No, yeah.
But they were good together.
Annette Bening in Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, Emma Stone, Poor Things.
Emma Stone. She was so good.
So I think I think Margot Robbie deserved to be in the Carey Mulligan or the Annette Bening.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset. Like, that, I think she would fit in that.
Just because, like I said, for that scene, I mean, she's amazing all the way through it, but that scene in particular, I was like, the writing's not holding up, but her performance makes it.
That's like, true.
She's
that's true.
Of her actually coming to touching. Terms with it. All right. Yeah. The Holdovers.
I love The Holdovers.
Of course you do. Your man is gaining steam to win Best Actor,
Paul Giamatti. For that.
I don't know if he will.
Oh, I'd love to see him win.
I know you would. Just because I think a lot of people love him and really want to see him win.
This movie is like a warm hug.
You really loved
it. It's such a good Christmas movie. It should be a Christmas classic. Bring that on. Replay it every Christmas. It's so good. I loved it.
So the best actor in a leading role is Bradley Cooper in Maestro. We'll get to that. Coleman Domingo in Rustin, which I've seen. It's a biopic, he was a guy that helped the Million Man March with Dr. Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And he's good, but it's like one of those, like, it's like Maestro. We'll get to that. Paul Giamatti, Cillian Murphy, mm-hmm.
Cillian,
and then Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction. So, I think it's really between Cillian Murphy and, Paul Giamatti. Very different performance. This is why award shows are stupid, because they're both doing very different things. Paul Giamatti is a cantankerous lecturer with several ailments, which I would argue made you love him more. Number one, it's Paul Giamatti. It's your boy.
I just love it that they had him with that... Yeah, like, and he had a few conditions, including a glass eye. I mean, we shouldn't laugh about this.
No.
But my favourite was he has that condition that makes you smell like fish.
Yes. You fell in love with him when he was telling, I've got a condition where it doesn't break down and I smell like fish. And you were like, oh.
that is a real condition. Yes, and that would be absolutely horrible.
And he's got a hype. Hyperhidrosis
and a glass eye.
Would you have had?
Yes.
Hang on, let me just shut this door. And a glass eye. Yes. And so he's stuck at this boarding school and he's very... And it's, like you said, it's a warm Christmas movie. It's very much filmed in the same way as like a Hal Ashby movie, like Harold and Maude. That kind of thing early, like that 70s, set in the 70s, but it's sort of shot that way.
Yeah.
Of like quirky and character based and people who can't really connect.
Yes.
The three main people are going through it. And really, really, he's just difficult to like.
And the boy is very difficult to like as well.
Yeah.
But they connect.
Yeah, and they make connections and they, again, it's not not surprising. Like, the movie's not surprising, but it's just... It's like when you just watch a good movie and you're like, oh, I know what's... I kind of know what's going to happen, but if the acting's good and the writing's good and it's all good, then you're like, I'm in. Yeah. This movie's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're a big...
And the glass eye... Well, I didn't know if it was a glass eye or a turned eye.
Yeah.
But I think it was meant to be a glass eye.
Yeah.
But
at one point, someone says, like, which eye am I meant to look at? Yeah. And he doesn't tell them right away, which is just a great little...
But it was so real, and he just... He carried it so genuinely. I was like, I think I said to you, does he have really a...
Yeah, something up with his eye? Does Paul Giamatti have
something?
Does
he normally have a lazy eye?
Yeah, because it's not really referenced until someone does. And
yeah, but there's a lot of that. They somehow made his eye look like it was turned.
Yeah. Oh, what a character.
But it's really good. And it's quite sad as well about grief.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like this sort of... There's a heaviness to it. Where you go, oh, okay, like, then, like I said, you know where it's ending, you know where it's going, but it doesn't, it's not like, there's no, like, big swell of music and finally stands up to someone, or they break through and they become great friends, and it's just like, ugh, okay, can we help each other? Can we just be nice to each other for 5 minutes in a row? And it's a lot of just, and then...
Is that nominated for Best Picture?
Best Picture, yeah. And Best Actor and Best Supporting Actress. What's her name? I can't remember how to pronounce her name. But she'll probably win because she's won every other award. Is it Joy? Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah.
But she's been winning every award. Because Jodie Foster in Naiad, American Ferrara,
Jodie and Foster.
Uh-huh. Danielle Brooks in The Colour Purple. I haven't seen it. And then Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, who doesn't really have much to do at all in that movie, got nominated for Best Supporting Actress, which is bizarre when lots of other people probably could have. Anyway.
I feel like for her, though, it's like she has been so good in every movie she's been in that it kind of feels like, okay, we need to...
There's a lot of that, yes, when they go, oh, yeah, you're good.
Yeah, yeah. It's about time we give you one.
Yeah. Well, at least a nomination. Yes, come in. Hi.
Can I make myself some cinnamon toast?
God. Where were we? All right, so. Well, we better hurry up. I was saying you were only going to talk for 10 minutes, but you... So, Killers of the Flower Moon,
I haven't seen. Right. I want to see it, but I just haven't. I was talking
to you earlier, like, it's a very long movie, probably... you know, it's sacrilegious to say, but watch it in two sittings.
I don't know if I don't like doing that. I want to watch the whole thing in one.
You start it at 10:30 and finish it at 2 in the morning.
Well, it depends on the time I start it. I'll try and start it early.
But it's a very good movie, of course. It's a Martin Scorsese movie. Like, The Irishman was very long and it was okay. But this is a movie where I watched it and I was like, okay, yeah, I enjoyed that. And then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, oh, there is a lot happening beneath the surface. It's what, if Martin Scorsese is making a good movie, there's a lot where you're like, the first time you watch it, you're like, oh, okay, I got this movie. And then when you think about it, you're like, what is he actually, what's he trying to say? And which character are we meant? I mean, the central couple of Lily Gladstone and Leonardo DiCaprio is so complicated, and it shouldn't be, but it is. And the discussion around it, I've read some really cool stuff about it, because it's easy to say, oh, like, he's a horrible white man in this movie, but there's something, because he's not smart and he's being manipulated, it's complicated, and because it's, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, you're kind of like, he's not evil, but he's not nice, he's horrible. I don't know, it's, you'll see when you watch it. But anyway, if you haven't seen it, you should. It's pretty great, and it's, you know, it's very violent, as all Martin Scorsese movies is, and it ends with him trying to discuss basically, like, who gets to tell these stories. That's a really interesting thing. Now, I said to you earlier, like, oh, maybe I'll rank the top 10, these 10 movies, and I said this is how I'd rank it. I'd put Maestro at 10, and then the rest can all figure it out for themselves, because I don't know. The reason I'm doing this is because I liked all of these movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare that I go, oh, I've seen all of them, and I like all of them. Maestro, it's okay, but it's just not saying anything.
Mm.
It starts with like this opening credit of like, the purpose of art is to blah, blah. It's I know it's not, I didn't find it pretentious, but what I found it was, it's hard to explain that it's like trying too hard to win an Oscar. Like, that's a lot of the commentary around it, is Bradley Cooper's really trying to win an Oscar with this movie.
So I just have no like interest in watching it at all.
It's not, it's just, you know, like, you've seen this movie. Like, it's one of those things where you're like, I've seen this movie.
Also, it's like the protagonist, I don't know, was he Leonard Bernstein, a composer or something?
Yeah, he's a composer. He composed the score for a lot of movies that you were, like, he did all West Side, he wrote West Side Story, the music for it and all that stuff.
Huh.
So he's very influential, but he's also, and he's also, was also bisexual and a classic philanderer. But there's, like, it starts off like being, oh, this movie's going to be high and mighty about the value of art. And then it's like a bunch of stuff that happens to this guy. Like, it's just a classic, this is just, here's his life. Yeah, of just, oh, this is what happened. Here's the love of his life.
So it could be any person.
Could be any person. Yeah. But then now he's a really amazing musical scene.
Yeah. Okay.
And now here's a really amazing scene of him conducting. Like, really amazing and beautifully shot and powerful, and the music's fantastic. And if you're in the cinema, like, wow, that'd be a real moment. Like, but then the rest of it, like, here's some other stuff that happens. Yeah. And that has another fight scene in it. And this is probably the difference, is the fight scene, the argument scene in Anatomy of a Fall, like you said, is like, oh my God, like, it's like you're listening in on two real people having a fight. The fight scene in Maestro has two actors being as actorly as possible whilst they're having an argument. The Thanksgiving Day parade is coming past with all these like Snoopy balloons, and you know, so it's like, this is, outside is not important, what's happening in here is art, but what people want is the material. Like, it's obvious but clever is one of those things. But if I showed you that scene, you'd be like, oh, like, here's, let's watch Anatomy of a Fall and then watch the scene from Maestro, you'd be like,
yeah,
no thank you.
Yeah.
Because of that. But in the context, it's I mean, it's okay. I don't want to say it's a terrible movie, because it's not. But it's...
There just hasn't been anything about it that's been like, oh, I really want to see that.
Yeah.
Like, it just hasn't grabbed me.
You've got to see it. It's on Netflix. Yeah. You can just fire it up whenever you wanted to.
Nothing has drawn me to it.
No. And it's not a good sign when all the talk seems to be about his prosthetic nose. Like, I didn't think that was distracting at all. I didn't care about that at all. But if all the commentary is about like he wore a fake nose to try and win an Oscar, then your movie's not getting across like you want it to.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And plus, I wonder if, like, because Tar came out last year, you know,
I was thinking about Tar,
because Tar came
out, and Tar was so good. But the interesting, like, again, I'm like, oh, I'm not that interested in conducting
the
music world. That's not really like something that I have a huge interest in. But I have a huge interest in Cate Blanchett.
Yes, and Cate Blanchett.
And she was friggin' incredible in that.
Yeah.
Which you didn't need to know anything about conducting or music or anything like that. She was just such a incredible character. So I was very interested to watch it for her. But with this, there isn't really anything that's drawing me in. I probably would enjoy it okay enough if I watched it, but
I don't know if you would.
Nah, maybe not.
I don't even know if you would. What about Oppenheimer?
I enjoyed Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Were you the same as me? I've talked about it before, like the second or the after the explosion, and then they got cut to the sort of trial stuff.
Yeah.
That didn't grab me as much.
Yeah.
Were you the same? Or
I was the same. The trial stuff kind of dragged.
Yeah.
I liked more of the study of when it was more just on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole machinations around the actual workings of getting that bomb built. And
it just seemed like once you detonated
the village that they made and all that was going on, and his own personal kind of issues around conflicted feelings about it.
Yeah.
But then sort of when it moved onto the courtroom stuff, it kind of lost
it. Yeah, it was kind of like, well, once you've shown like we can destroy the world... Now we're just going to talk about men and what they do behind the scenes to get power.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't, I mean.
And who's going to take the blame for it now?
It'll probably win Best Picture. But, you know, like I liked it, but I did. Again, like it, and I've spoken about this, like it made me in a movie, like think about mankind or humankind's ability to destroy itself. And all of human history led to this moment of like what we could achieve and the destruction we could cause. That I thought about that in the movie.
Yes.
And then I had to sit through.
I think men as well, in you rooms know, another, talking. Yeah. And another kind of beef I had with it was that you and I both leading up to it had listened to a podcast which really delved into the bomb and the effect on Hiroshima, like in absolute graphic detail.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting, which isn't it?
Really affected me, the podcast, because they did a much better job, I thought.
Yeah, the movie just sort of like, oh, we dropped all this death on Japan and now we're going to just
and we're not going to show a single shot of Japan.
And now we're just going to go back to the men.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, you're not really capturing how fucking monstrous this was and the death and destruction that was caused. It just didn't do it justice, I think. I appreciate that it attempted and it did, you know, it wasn't all, it had the bomb that had to happen and it had to do this. Like, it wasn't like that. It wasn't presenting it as, it's certainly not as a heroic thing and as a positive thing, but it didn't go far enough in my mind to really explore the effects of it, the absolute, evil of it.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, I have a feeling like Christopher Nolan makes these movies, and in this movie's not an exception, where it's like he's more interested in, now I'm going to talk about what happens to
something
after it's come out. Is this about you? Is this about you making movies and then when it comes out, people take credit and you're the focus is lost? Or is it about when a collaboration happens but then you get pushed to the side? Like, I was kind of like, what is this actually about? About himself. This isn't about, like, I don't know.
I think we both had that beef with it. There were so many other things, interesting things. Like, either keep it on him or expand it to what was, the effect in Japan and the actual effects of it. Even what
the effect were worldwide with,
like, the reactions to it. Yeah. The fear of it. Rather than this ongoing courtroom battle. Like, it just, it lost me in that part. Yeah. In saying that, I enjoyed the movie. Yeah.
You fire it up again?
Would I watch it again? Yeah. Maybe not. I don't feel the need to watch it again.
Yeah, that's always.
It was a good experience to have in the cinema, but I don't particularly want to relive it. No.
I don't know. I thought Cillian Murphy was awesome.
Yeah, there was nothing wrong with the acting, and I think even Robert Downey Jr. he was great. But again, I think, like, I just didn't really need it.
What about
whole courtroom part of it?
I mean, we're going to talk about it in a bit more detail in another movie, but what about the sex scenes?
Oh, forgettable and really pointless.
Really pointless. Like, weird.
It was just, I forgot that they were even in there.
Yeah.
That was, what's her name? Who was the actress? Well, she was in Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah, what's her name? Oh, Florence.
Florence Pugh. Yeah. Yes. She's a great actress, but, like, all we saw was her being all sexy and having those weird sex scenes with him.
Yeah. And then, like, here's another one that's not real, but it's in the courtroom anyway.
Yeah. Not a great part for her.
Well, what about the sex scenes in Poor Things?
Oh, I love them. I thought they were great, funny.
Right. So we had a great time watching Poor Things.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much when I thought about it, but at one point I remember I might have turned to you and said, is this my new favorite movie? I was having so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're
in Portugal and she was eating, learning all the eating and the cakes and the dancing and all of this stuff. I was like, I'm having so much fun. There's been a lot of talk about, like, the sex of it all and the gratuitousness of the sexual stuff, but I don't know. Like,
I thought it was all for a purpose. Like, right. I felt the sex scenes were important to the character and to her development.
Yeah.
And to me, it wasn't gratuitous at all. It was like, it was funny as well.
Yeah, very funny.
And just, you know, her having no... just experiencing life, I think, and all the different things there. I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
But as I said to you, like, I find hearing about sex workers' experiences when I've read book about it, it's not the sex, it's the interest. Well, it's experiences, but it's the people that you meet and what's revealed to you and what people, when they're invulnerable like that, what they say and what you find out about people. And there's some horrible sides to it as well, but I think it's an interesting exploration of the human condition.
Yeah.
And when people sort of are vulnerable like that, and she was able to learn more about humans and emotions through that. So to me, it made sense in the storyline and her development, and it was funny. Sex is funny. She's learning it all these different things in such a sped up kind of
way. Yeah, and it's kind of, even thinking about it, the sex scenes themselves are quite frantic and manic and almost sped up comically. They are comical.
Yeah.
A lot of the times. And yeah, she just, I don't know. She's a captivating actress.
Yeah.
At the best of times, but there's a lot of times in that movie where you're like, oh, this is all happening, and you're learning a lot. And I think the bit on the boat I wanted more from, where she meets the cynic.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is the classic, like, teenage, she's in the teenage state of, like, or university state, where you meet all these cynical people that tell you, this is how the, show you how the world really is. And all of a sudden you're confronted with, like, why is there poor people? Well, that's not fair. But they sort of just brush past that a bit too quickly. Just the William Dafoe of it all was just, oh my God, monster and weird. And, you know, his father takes his stomach acid out to see if you can survive without it. Turns out you need it. Like, it's just,
so he has to make those bubbles.
Make weird gas bubbles come out. I think that moment where a gas bubble, like a literal bubble, comes out of his mouth, I was like,
first scene where, like, she's like, you're not sure what's going on with her. She's obviously, you know, not at full capacity mentally.
Yeah.
And he's got the bubbles coming out, and there's like chickens or ducks.
Chicken, half chicken, half pigs.
Half pigs wandering around. You're like, what is going on?
100%. All I thought was, if this movie came out when I was like 21, like 99, when all those movie year came out around that time, I would have been back the next day watching that movie.
Yeah.
Like
100%. I just loved it. I love the set design. I love the costumes. Mm. I love the acting. I thought it was hilarious. It was enjoyable to watch. I thought the sex scenes were so funny and touching. Like, I loved it all. I just love watching it. People's
attitudes to sex really get confronted with that when it's all played for comedy. Of like, oh, it's, I don't know, like, it's puerile, or it's like, it's the gratuitousness of it.
But to me, like, they weren't even making them sexy.
No.
Like, no, yes, they were having sex but it was funny. Like, I just thought, I don't like it. Yeah, I mean, that's why the Florence Pugh one was so, those ones were so forgettable, because it was like, oh, we have to put this in. Oh, here's the sexy part. Here's the sexy woman. This is all the role she plays. That was not all that was going on in that movie with Emma Stone.
No. No, like, there was more behind it.
And
the sex was part of her, like, maturity.
Yeah, yeah.
And how she controlled it, how she controlled sex.
And learned about people and human nature.
Yeah.
So
she might win.
And I thought she was brilliant in it. She was so good in it.
She might win. It's probably really close between her and Lily Gladstone.
Mark Ruffalo, who I love.
Mark Ruffalo. Being ridiculous. He's not often ridiculous in his movies.
He is so funny in this.
And he's just a mess.
The dance scene.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
He's a nutter. That, some of that, someone I read said it reminded him, he could have been in Moulin Rouge. And I was like, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Very over the top.
Very over the top.
Stylized. I mean, you could say that there was similarities with the tone of... Yeah.
He even said himself, like, making the movie was like, this is terrible. I'm hopeless. Because he's never really acted that way before, so he just thought everything he was doing was wrong.
Oh, it was perfect.
And then he watched it with people, and he was like, everyone seemed to be enjoying my performance, but I hate it, which is interesting. All right, we've got two left, and then we'll leave.
Poor Things can win it all.
It won't, but yes, good for them. And then Past Lives. I think Past Lives might be my favourite of the movies.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I really... loved Past Lives.
I enjoyed it, but with the caliber of the other ones, I don't know if it stands out to me.
I don't think it would win a Best Picture Oscar, but it might be the one that I've thought about the most since seeing it.
Mm.
The one that, especially the ending, I just was knocked out by beautiful. The last section. I liked. The connecting with people over the internet during, like, there was a lockdown, so they're in the past it's in Skype and then they're connecting in Zoom. I like how they can't quite connect.
Mm.
There's, all of a sudden there's three people and none of them can really communicate at sort of the level they want to with each other because of the language and the cultural barriers and things like that. And I just thought... I don't know. It's just nice to see a movie that wasn't like, well, what's going to happen and what's the ending you expected?
Mm.
You know? Like, I think it was really that last 10, 15 minutes of the movie was in the cinema was so tense.
Yeah.
Because you weren't sure what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And what you weren't, I found, were you sure of what you wanted to happen?
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of like... I liked it because it was small. Like, these movies are big. Poor Things is a big movie.
Yeah, that's why it sort of gets lost amongst all of that. But it was a beautiful movie. And I think for that movie, if you'd had the experience of... that unique experience that she had of leaving your culture and your homeland and moving somewhere totally different.
Yeah.
And starting over, but knowing that if you stayed there, you would have had a completely different life.
Completely
and it's exploring life. That of like, well, who would I be if I stayed there? Am I a different person now?
Yeah.
Can I connect to that person that I would have been if I stayed there?
Yeah.
What
part of me was left behind and that person still connected to? Do they exist?
Yeah. I loved that exploration of all of that. And I think... if you have experienced that yourself, it would be even more touching. Like, I think she really captured that.
I love for a fact that, like, within the first 2 minutes, I was like, oh, I got to get Betty Chow to watch this movie.
Because
the opening scene is the siblings arguing about
their English name.
Choosing their names. And I was like, this is obviously well observed because I know someone
who had this exact thing of
like, no, I want to be called that name. And just like, that's so...
Yeah, so I think for an immigrant particularly from a, you know, non-Western to a Western country or a non-English speaking to an English speaking country, where there's a real cultural difference. Not going from America to Australia or England to Australia. I'm talking, you know, people who really leave behind their cultural identity, you know, or bring it with them, but are moving away from it. And also her partner wasn't from the same cultural background. He was learning Korean, but you know, was an English speaker. So I think that I really, really enjoyed it. But I think if you'd had a similar experience, which lots of people have, you would even connect to it more. I would really like to hear how people felt it. I think I'd be like, I was really affected by it. But I think if you'd have experienced that, it would be just like, and she really tapped into that.
Yeah. And then the Holocaust movie, you said, I don't really want to watch another Holocaust movie, but I hear The Zone of Interest is really good.
And I desperately want to watch this one. And you desperately
want to watch this one. And it was fantastic as well. That's what I mean. Like, this is so rare to have, like, there's 10 movies. I like them all. I loved 9 of them.
Mm.
I really did. I really liked so many of them.
Yeah.
And The Zone of Interest we only watched fairly recently, and so it's pretty fresh in our minds, but it is pertinent, you might say. It's timely.
Yeah, and that's what, like, my hesitation when I first heard it was, oh, I've seen Holocaust movies.
Yeah.
I've seen so many of them.
Yeah.
What has this one got to offer?
Yeah.
Well, how is this different? And all I can say is it's very different to any other
kind of
Holocaust movie.
It's not really about the Holocaust, you know what I mean?
It's a small story, really a family story.
Yeah.
Showing the everyday banality of evil. The banality of
evil.
That's
what I mean. It's not really about
SS soldiers or the what was he? He was like the director of Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Oh.
He was a director.
Director, like the big boss. The big boss. But his family, his home, how they live their life, with this absolute evil happening right next door, and daddy, husband, the architect of it.
Yeah, focusing on whether the cauliflowers are growing properly and can we afford to put a pool in and can we do
so all this kind of just everyday family stuff happening at the same time. Is that this is his job. His job was also happened to be killing Jews.
Yeah.
In horrific ways and doing all this evil and horror, which was his job. But then he'd come home and have, like, you know, a normal family life.
Have that conversation with his wife where they're laughing about
servants
and connecting
with
people.
So it's, even though you don't actually see what goes on behind that wall, you hear screams and things, but...
just the sound of the...
And they actually have... And there's a sound of an engine revving the whole time, and apparently that was true. They had... they hired someone to just rev an engine to try and drown out the screams and horrible noises happening next door.
But that's what I mean when I said it's not really about the Holocaust. It's about how that banality can live literally next door to horror. That we just go, and we'll put that out of our mind and focus on the mundanity of our everyday and get distracted by that. We won't have to acknowledge the horror that's happening. I mean, this is happening next door, but it's just like...
And this is why I think it is important. It's such an important movie at this time in particular too, where we have a genocide happening again.
Yeah.
That it's... You can't be comfortable with this stuff. You can't be okay and just, this is what happens. I mean...
Yeah.
People just living their lives as this absolute horror is going on.
Yeah.
We look at that and think that's a horrible, monstrous thing to do. I mean, we all need to be aware of this because they're humans.
Yes.
They're not monsters. They're not...
No, that's the thing. It's like how boring it is to be shown like
a
blueprint
normal family.
Of like, hey, this is the design we've got of this like really cool oven and gas chamber that will make us more efficient. And you're like, the way they're just talking about it is... That's the brutality of it. It's like, oh, okay, well, thank you for your tender. I've got others to look at. We'll let you know. Like, that stuff, you're like, well, that obviously happened. You don't think about it.
Yeah.
But this industrialized death is just people have to go in and go, well, this is how we can do it more efficiently. Oh, okay, well, then here's, you get paid this money for creating this and well done. And and you feel proud. And how did it go today? Oh, I think we sold. Like, it's that part of it really, really... made me pause and just be like, oh my god, of course, I hadn't thought of this before, of just like,
yeah. And the way it's filmed, the way it's set up, it's just very you know, there's no
showing.
No emotional soundtrack or you know, over the top acting or scenes. It's so banal in terms of this is just everyday. It's his work and his home life that you have to, like, it's so chilling because of it. And they're just having these parties in the backyard with this, you see the smoke of the gas chambers right next door.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that would never happen today.
I think it's a pertinent movie to watch, I think, in these times as well of, we all need to be...
Yeah, hold things accountable.
Yeah.
So what would you... If you had to vote, would you be voting for Best Picture for what, do you think? Like I said, that's a murderous row of movies, and you haven't seen all of them.
No, I haven't seen all of them.
But you, I mean, you love The Holdovers, you loved Anatomy of a Fall, you love Poor Things, you love The Zone of Interest.
Well, for me, I'd say Poor Things.
Right. That's your pick.
Yeah.
I don't, if I had to choose, that's a really tough one.
But do you...
I might say Anatomy of a Fall, like it's the best movie. Yeah, like,
it could, I'd be happy with that. And that might
surprise me, but...
I don't think it will win. But...
I like Past Lives, I responded to that probably best, but... it's a pretty simple movie and it's doing simpler things than with the camera and all that stuff, so I don't know, but I know Oppenheimer's going to win, sadly.
Oh.
And you know, in some parts great, like there's some bits that were literally breathtaking I found, but yeah it might be a movie where over time people will look back and go, that was a pretty impressive year. We don't often get movies where you're like, oh yeah, I liked all these movies, but I thought some, these are all so different.
Mm.
They're all so different.
Mm.
And so some of them are really weird.
Mm.
Like Barbie has some very weird elements to it. And obviously Poor Things is very, very weird from the start to finish.
Yes.
But anyway.
The movie that I've most enjoyed this year,
yeah,
is not even a new movie.
Oh, God. Yes, Justine's going to tell you about the lovely movie. I think I know what she's going to talk about.
Speak No Evil.
Is this the movie you watched 2 days in a row?
Yes.
Far out.
I totally freaked myself out.
So, yes.
And then watched it again. I'm going to
watch the first bit of it again.
Well, you're the one who told me about this movie.
Yeah, I know, but Nick Manianis was the
Nick
one
Maniart
who was like,
came from Nick Manianis.
Hey, you should see this movie. And when I looked it up, I was like, I don't want to watch that. And then... Justine started watching it and I could hear it. Another movie I could hear.
Oh, it's
and then I looked up what happened in it and I was like, oh my God. And then when she said, it was so good, I'm going to watch it again the next night. What's it called? Speak No Evil.
Speak No Evil.
Is it Dutch? Is it or Danish?
I think it's Danish, but it's it's a two couples in it. One's Dutch, one's Danish.
Yes.
And so it's a mixture of both languages. But I think
and it's all about what happens when you are too nice.
When you are what?
Too nice.
Yes, basically. Yes. You've got to listen to your own instincts. Don't do things just to be polite.
Yes.
It's basically like, you know, a couple ask another couple to come and stay with them.
Yeah.
They don't know them that well.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I really don't want to do that, but I don't want to.
Don't want to be rude.
I don't want to be rude. That would be rude if we don't know. It's only a 7-hour drive. Let's do it. And
Yep.
Basically think of like the worst stuff that could happen and you still wouldn't really know.
No.
So that's my pick. It's not going to win Oscar.
No.
Horrors are never nominated and I think they're discriminated against.
Absolutely. Well, that movie's pretty full on. And speaking of, you know, thank you for doing something maybe you didn't want to do. You said I did tell you I was going to talk to you for 10 minutes. It's now an hour and over an hour. So thank you very much.
You might have to edit some of that out.
Thank you very much.
Don't edit out me recommending Speak No Evil, though.
I won't. Bye. That's it.